on, and we've got two of the best in the business when it comes to political commentary. My main man, Martin the Bomber Bradbury, and Jamie Daly. Tēnā kōrua. Evening, gentlemen.
Pleasure to be here.
Kia ora.
Kia ora. Hey, Bomber, just how entitled is the Prime Minister?
I think the Prime Minister showed, I think a side to himself that has been there from the beginning, but I don't think we noticed it. The Prime Minister is a very devout believer in an evangelical stance and a belief system called prosperity theology, whereby you gain your wealth and your privilege because God blesses you. It's the same sort of ideology that Brian Tamaki sort of believes in. You know, he has this great big fancy gold wash and nice houses and big motorcycles because God is blessing him. And so for Prime Minister Luxon, he sees those privileges and he sees those benefits and those entitlements as part of his blessings. And I think we saw the exact same situation play out when he wanted to take an EV, the EV subsidy for himself for a car that he wanted to get. And the National Party mandarins around him were very concerned because he was criticising Labour for the policy but wanted to take the entitlement himself. And I think that this is part of his nature. We think that he misread the room. I think the press gallery misread him. He sees these sorts of entitlements as proof positive that God loves him. And we all saw it as this is a complete... how can you preach austerity but you're taking $52,000 each year from the taxpayer after saying you didn't want to use them as an ATM? I mean, we all saw it as hypocrisy, but it's actually very aligned with his values.
Jamie, you're not as partisan as myself and the Bomber. Do you think that it was simply an issue that the Prime Minister has funded up on, dealt with, or do you think this is sort of ongoing, sort of casting doubt in terms of the core kaupapa that makes up this man?
I just sort of looking at it broadly, I must admit I did actually reverse my stance on this. We exchanged words around this, Shane. You know, in terms of obviously the other MPs that have this accommodation entitlement, and you made a very, very good point, Shane, which I sort of, when I reflect on it, I thought it was a very well made point, and that was simply that he had a whare there in Premier House that he was able to access. That's the difference between in terms of other MPs that have this accommodation, something, and I was watching the press pack actually that evening, and what was quite funny was I think General Lynch made the comment that, you know, Prime Minister, if it was good enough for Neve and Jacinda to live in Premier House, has there been a war that's fallen down since that time, which I thought was quite humorous, you know?
That's right, Jamie. And, you know, I was on another show on Saturday, and they said, well, you know, the Prime Minister has to host functions and host dignitaries. Well, this came to the fore because of an off-the-cuff comment he made when he hosted the Australian cricket team there in Premier House, and I didn't get an invite. I'm not sure if you did, Bomber, or you did, Jamie, but the Christmas party was held there. I've spoken to Helen Clark, who lived there a little while ago, but for quite some time. It's not exactly a doss house, is it, Bomber?
Oh, look, I mean, if you look at the photos inside Premier House, and there are quite a few circulating online at the moment, I mean, it's flash as hell. I don't think you could pretend. I mean, unless you're the, you know, Sultan of Brunei. And I think that this comes back to his values. He's very tenacious about this, Christopher Luxon. He believes these are things he's entitled to. He's earned them. And the idea that he should give up something he's earned really cuts against his grain. And I think we've seen a side of the Prime Minister that surprised us all.
Hey, look, because I want to have a sort of some balance in this kōrero, Te Pāti Māori, they have a private members bill that should come up in the next lot of sitting that basically... which was their policy at the last election, and that is removing GST on kai. Wasn't quite where Labor was at the last election. It was fresh fruit and veggies, but I think it was 2011, not that long ago, where that was the exactly the Labor Party policy. My understanding is that they may not support this bill, which means, in fact, what they'll do is they'll vote for against the bill and with the government. That's going to send a very bad message, in, from my perspective, to working people. Bomber, do Labor have to be careful about this? That they're certainly that they're going to sort of alienate their core base.
I think Labor is in a real pickle. Mm. They don't really know what they stand for. They aren't quite clear about what it is to be Labor in 2024. What are the values of the party? And for them to side with the government on an idea that is worthy of consideration, I mean, are there fundamental problems with this? Yes. The fundamental problems being that we can't trust those bloody supermarkets and the duopoly position they've got in the market from continuing to exploit that 50, even if they took the 15% off, they might put it up, you know. Those sorts of dynamics are problematic. But when people are hooting as badly as they are right now, when you see that basics have gone up, basic food items have gone up 50% in 1 year, 50% in 1 year, people are hooting out there like never before. 600,000 New Zealanders require aid from food banks every single month. For those brothers and sisters and those whānau out there, hearing that the Labor Party isn't going to bother taking 15% off food and kai that they're trying to provide to their table, yeah, that'll feel like a kick in the teeth.
Is this a litmus test for Labor in opposition, Jamie?
I think Bomb has absolutely nailed it. It's paramount that Hipkins and the team get in behind Te Pāti Māori. You know, given that the demographic they've historically represented, this plays right into that demographic. And, you know, it's not all about gaining votes, but they just have to be on the right side in this one. And I think it's extremely important. And I'd urge them to review, you know, the suggestions that you're saying coming out of there that they may not support this. This is quite a surprise to me.
Because here's the thing, well, you know, the question hasn't been put. I think it's due when the House sits in about two or three weeks time. But here's the thing, isn't it, Jamie? You're not just voting against the bill, you're voting with the coalition government on the first, in terms of the first real debate on quite an important and critical economic issue, Jamie.
Yes, and obviously, given what they campaigned on in 2023 with fresh food and fruit and veg, one would suggest that, you know, if they went completely the opposite way in 360 on this, I'd even ask the question: who is the Labor Party at the moment? You know, it's as Bomber quite rightly pointed out, there is a sort of an identity issue there in terms of them finding themselves, what they stand for, and I think that'll roll off the back of, you know, in the coming months with the leadership obviously coming up for talk, which we'll probably get into shortly, I guess, Shane.
I want to have a corridor about that. You know, some people say, well, it's not too bad for Labor. They haven't lost any traction. They're on around 28%, only within 10% striking distance. But their leader has lost some popularity, but you've got to put that in perspective. It quite often happens with when you are in opposition. But do you think that the leader of the opposition's place is under threat, Bomber?
I think that Labor are desperately looking for leadership. I don't know if they're looking for a new leader yet, but they're looking for leadership. They are still looking for a break from the loss. They're still looking for a reset, I think, New Zealanders, from Labor. Last election, there was a lot of post-COVID bitterness, a lot of anger. People turned to the fringes. People sort of voted in this New Zealand First Act National Party without really knowing what the policy platform would mean, what the dynamics would mean. I think we've seen over the last 4 months in a blitzkrieg of very hard right, racist, climate denying, beneficiary bashing policies and revenge fantasies being rammed through that have surprised us all. I think that's clear. And in the meantime, people are looking to Labor for some leadership. I found it extraordinary that John Campbell's piece, his brilliant analysis over this lack of leadership from Labor, that piece floated around online in the top three most read sections for about 4 days. There is certainly a hunger, I think, for an opposition to step up against this far-right nonsense. But Tippy still hasn't shown us why he even learned anything from what he lost. You know, he's still struggling, saying, I'm not really sure what
That's
happened.
Right, well, that's Jamie. That's right, isn't it, Jamie? He said, I'm not sure why we lost. And let's remember, folks, that the Nats actually didn't do that well at 38%, but 200,000 people stayed home. And I think this is part of my perspective. A lot of working class folks, particularly the staunches of the staunch Labor people, are the Pacifica whānau, Aingar out there. Yes. They're the staunches of the staunch. They just couldn't bring themselves to vote National or ACT, but weren't motivated in terms of the policy announcement and the lack of sort of kaha that Chris sort of had in the campaign. This certainly isn't going to get the 200,000 missing people activated and motivated, is it, Jamie?
Yeah, absolutely. And as Bomber touched on the leadership issue, it's akin to an ageing Black Cap side at the moment.
Yeah.
You look at the senior leadership, Grant Robertson. Yeah. We've obviously had Enol Te Tekatne, Calvin Davis, call time on careers. A lot of experience has sort of been gutted, as we see in cyclical elections. But that's probably the main concern for Labor, is there's actually a case for a change in leadership. But then the question is, Shane, who?
See, I smell blood. And that's because I love a good spill. I love a good scrap. I've been right in the heart of it. I was right in the heart of when Mike Moore got dumped, and then when Helen then he had another go at Helen, sort of on the peripheral with David Shearer, a supporter of ours, a supporter of his. But I do smell blood, Bomber, and I think perhaps it's a matter of not if but when.
I think that it really is going to have to coalesce around an idea and a vision. Someone is going to have to come forward and say the Labor Party stands for taxing the very wealthy in this country to provide for the social infrastructure that we need. And that is the crossing line. That's the Rubicon. Whoever is going to step up and do that first, they are the leader. Now, in terms of... And it's not impossible for Chippy to pick this up. I mean, I think they need to have a weekend where it's called, they call the progressive TED Talks of New Zealand, and they, you know, the Labor Party presides over it, and you have, you know, the smartest people from New Zealand coming in, doing an 8-minute sort of presentation of something progressive and a new idea, and they look to some of those ideas, and they look to champion. I mean, Chippy could do this. But if he doesn't, if he's just stuck in the mud and simply seems to believe, well, if I wait long enough, people will get sick of this government and I'll get in. If that's where he's going to go, well, I think it's going to need, and I think Jamie's right about where would the talent come from. And I think that if you're going to look down that list, I mean, I think the future leaders of the Labor Party, I mean, it's either Kieran McNulty and Irina Williams. I think those two are phenomenal talents.
Can I put another name in the court at all? And I interviewed her on a podcast with my mate Phil Quinn, Barbara Edmondson, probably the most qualified finance spokesperson that Labor has ever had.
But a very different
background, mother of eight, from Mana, up through the grassroots, but highly qualified, highly respected on both sides of the houses. She worked for Judith Collins. Michael Woodhouse and Stuart as a functionary. She's not only Jamie and Martin, she's all over the figures, but she's one of those people that can articulate complex facts and figures in very simple terms, and that shows to me that she knows what she's talking about. Jamie, someone like Barbara, do you think that she could possibly be in the wash? Because, you know, as the finance spokesperson, it's probably the second most important job when you're in opposition.
She's definitely got the background, as you mentioned, Shane. Yeah. And the key point that you made there, she's obviously worked on both sides.
Yeah.
You know, she's supported Judith Collins. And I also believe, like, just with, in terms of going back to the Fiesel said situation, just her, compassionate approach to the situation, I just thought that she, it just felt to me like as a voter, I could resonate the direction that she'd want to take as an economic manager of our country. And I've got quite a good vibe out of her, and seeing some of the early debates and contests of ideas she's had with Nicola Willis in the House has been quite good to see, actually.
Hey, let's talk about not so much about our brother Fiesel. You know, we all miss him, and we're deeply gutted about it, and just Pody, just sad. But Martin, you were at his tangihana, at his wake, at his public memorial. You know, just my impression of that. You know, normally when you leave something like that, you're very down, you're very sad and depressed, and you feel the sense of loss. I found all of that, but my gosh, the speakers, they were phenomenal. Young Pacifica, they were inspirational. They were aspirational. They wanted to give, in a time of despair, hope, including Fiesel's wife. It was something different, wasn't it, Martin? And something that I think that Aotearoa New Zealand will be better off if we capture and we go with that wave.
Oh, look, Fiesel was one of my oldest and longest friends. I'd known him for 30 years. We were at university together, and we would speak and talk often. He was someone I considered one of the greatest Gen X leaders of our generation. Yeah. He was that first wave of Pacific Island middle class who were able to come through into tertiary education, and his vision and ability to be able to build those networks between tertiary education training and the Pacific Island community. I mean, I think he seeded entire generations of new leaders coming through the South Pacific, South Auckland area. He was remarkable, and you're absolutely right. It was a beautiful, incredibly moving service. And it was a reminder of how he was able to touch everybody he met. But more importantly than that, I think that his politics and his vision of a New Zealand that actually worked together, that was focused on lifting up the poorest amongst us, and that was always Fez's political position. He was always focused on that. And his reminder, and I think as we look at this blitzkrieg of very hard right policies being rammed through this country right now, we need the vision of a Fiesel, and we need his good grace more now than ever before. And Lord, that maiden speech, I think, will go down
as
almost a new constitution for this country, you know?
Yeah. For our listeners, I want to give you a name. One of the speakers at the memorial service, his name is Harry Fatu Toliafoa, one of the greatest public speeches I've ever heard. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to be around a while. I've seen David Longyear's his best. It was passionate. He was able to draw the crowd through humour, wit. He would talk loudly. The crowd would listen. He'd have them in the palm of his hand. Then he'd sort of whisper, and would be just as attentive. Labour has a lot of talent in South Auckland, as my good mate Greg Preslin said, but somehow Labour hasn't been able to capture the next generation, Martin.
I think that there are real problems here with being able to reward Pacific Island leadership with the kind of promotion that Labour should be making there. And I think Labour have taken a lot of that Pacific Island vote for granted. And as you were saying about those 200,000 who stayed home and just went, I can't vote for the right, but you haven't made my life materially better when you promised me transformative change. And I think that if we are to kick this government out in 2026, and we need to, because if they don't leave in 2026, this nonsense gets cemented in for generations to come. We need to kick them out in 2026, but to do that, Labour has got to provide the people with a clear idea and a vision of how they're going to be materially better off under Labor.
Jamie, you live and operate and work in South Auckland. You've got a great young leader coming up, and James Winiata. You see that talent all the time. How do we promote it? How do we just ensure that the voices are heard?
I think it's just about working together with community, getting involved in your community, yeah. Shane, going down there to support leaders, immersing yourself in the community to give you that, I guess, offer you that pathway that anything's possible. You know, it's nothing like following a good community leader that you have similar core beliefs with and you have equal shared values. I think that's really paramount. As you touched on, Matt Winiata, he's a very good, I believe he's taken over local board, Manirewa is the head of local board, so really looking forward to him sort of imparting his knowledge and his expertise into the community of Manirewa.
Hey, Martin, Jamie, we're sort of limited in time. School lunches. Jamie, again, you live in South Auckland. They play an important part in keeping kids at school, keeping them active. You know, there's an old saying, but a true saying, hungry kids don't learn. What's your experience in terms of school lunches, Jamie?
Yeah, the $350 million, it's a targeted approach, yeah. Isn't it, Shane? So yeah, our whānau and like Ōtara, Kawarau, they're all experiencing this. I'm sort of the view, Shane, I sort of take a middle-of-the-road view. Mm. I do believe it's very paramount. We can't have hungry kids going to school. But we also need to, I guess, evaluate the situation over the last 12 to 18 months and see where we are. I absolutely believe it's got to stay in place, but it's just that in terms of what scale does it need to stay in place. And I don't know if we've got any key measurables to understand any statistics or data rather than emotion, because what I've seen through the media over the last couple of days is there hasn't actually been any core hard statistics. And maybe that is because we haven't had it going for long enough, Shane, to actually extract that information.
But that's part of the problem, Martin. You've got an Associate Minister of Education that says we need the facts, we need the figures, but he also said today that it was criminal, Martin.
I think it is absolutely outrageous and offensive in the extreme that we are taking food out of hungry children's mouths so that this government can afford a $1 billion a year tax cut for the wealthiest amongst us. It is an obscenity that he is talking about cuts of 30 to 50% from hungry children. It is an obscenity in a country of milk and honey that we cannot feed our own bloody children in school. It is an obscenity that David Seymour, who ideologically does not believe the state should be feeding children, is responsible for this. It's like having someone who hates dogs being put in charge of a puppy club. It is unacceptable to allow ideology as warped as this to be taking that kind of connection in schools, which is so essential, away. We know that truancy is complex. One of the things that brings truancy down is reducing the cost of getting those kids to those schools. And by providing a healthy meal, that might be the best kai they get. We should be expanding this to breakfast and lunches, and it should be universal throughout the country, as it is in many other countries.
Many other countries.
We compare ourselves against. It is outrageous.